you're here. Fellowship, sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Reading from Matthew 25, verse 36. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Great News Radio listeners, for praying up the Singing Men of GNN's presentation this past Saturday at the Taylorville Prison. It was awesome. It was a life-changing experience for all of us, and God worked in so many different ways. Thank you for your prayers. I think we had 10 standing ovations from the inmates. They filled this gymnasium, and we presented for nearly 2 hours. The guys shared lots of personal testimonies and insights into their own walk, their own prisons that God took them out of. We sang and sang and sang again with passion. These men were so very receptive. Some would kneel at their seats as we sang or prayed, many with their arms lifted up, their eyes closed, drinking in the worship, many singing along, clapping. In fact, it's the only time I think I've ever remembered when we sang our arrangement of A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, A Mighty Fortress, and they clapped through the whole thing. They clapped on and on for as much energy as we put out. They were up and out of their seats and clapping along. It was a festive, worshipful, God-honoring evening. It was just so incredible. And we were the ones that received the blessing. When it was all over, I asked all the singing men to connect with many of the inmates, making eye contact, and pledged that throughout the month of October, we would pray for them, and I asked them to be praying for us. Afterwards, we shook hands with so many of the men, and it was just a total God thing. So thanks again for your prayers on behalf of the singing men of GNN and the unique ways God is using this radio ministry through the singing men of GNN to touch lives. Well, that fits really well with today's special presentation. For the next 3 days, today through Wednesday, you're going to hear a 55-minute program broken into 3 parts, narrated by Chris Fabry, entitled Inciting Incidents. And this is a new book by Moody Publishers, 6 stories of fighting disappointments in a flawed world. And today through Wednesday, you'll hear 4 vignettes of how people's lives were transformed by specific incidents in their lives. So stay with us for the next 20 or so minutes. Be receptive, and I trust you'll be blessed. And by the way, it's Monday, October 1st, 2012. Happy October, everyone.
An inciting incident is something that happens in a story that sets a plot into motion.
It's a moment in a character's life that upsets the balance and moves them into one direction or another. And it's pivotal in a story structure. Without the inciting incident, a story can't happen.
Like an event, a circumstance or situation that arises that kind of creates or puts a fork in the road that comes into vision, and all of a sudden you have this aha moment.
The inciting incident. A catalyst, a game changer. It could be something large or small in life, a boulder in the road, or a simple snapshot, a moment in time caught and preserved in that life forever. After the moment, whether you realize it then or not, everything is different. It could take years to understand this was the moment your life changed, or you might recognize it immediately. You probably have an inciting incident in your life. As you listen to the 4 stories we'll present today, think about yours. There are 4 snapshots, 4 moments in time we'll preserve for you from the lives of our guests. For Tracy, it was in the upstairs bathroom. The shower represents a before and after she'll never forget. Blaine was in a car heading for a show. He's an actor. His inciting incident happened on Interstate 90 near Chicago. Jeff was walking over a bridge in Spain when someone said something so striking, so unnerving, that he had to turn around. And for David, well, David's story is a little tricky. He was attending a meeting where a popular author and motivational speaker was pontificating.
That moment was really the key factor in my life. It's kind of the before the conference and after the conference. Everything is kind of based on this moment.
The stories you're about to hear may relate to your life, may help you make sense of the place where you are. A place of being stuck, perhaps, a place where you may feel imprisoned. The good news is, the inciting incident of your life can bring freedom if you'll let it. Instead of staying where you are, that incident can propel you closer to God and closer to the person He wants you to become. I'm Chris Fabry, and the stories you're about to hear are detailed in a book called Inciting Incidents. You can find out more at the website, moodyradio.org.
The first thing you should know about me is that I'm a ghost.
Meet David Wenzel, a creative guy, really creative, a man who works with other creative people. You've probably seen his work and didn't even know it.
As a story consultant, we work with people who know their own story. They have been developing their brand. They know who they are as individuals, but at the same time, they need help figuring out where their story kind of fits into the world. So we, myself and my business partners, help them develop their own story. And what that means is we oftentimes are helping them write scripts. We're oftentimes helping them develop their online persona. We're helping them develop all sorts of aspects about their project that really just comes across as they are. And so one of the key things that I do is I develop a lot of the early content and a lot of the actual ghostwriting. So it might be one of our clients that I'm actually writing a book for, and that the term for that is ghostwriter. So I've been a part of a variety of projects, everything from Numa to a film series with Francis Chan or Tim Keller or Marcus Buckingham, where my contribution has been sizable, but we're never listed as being a part of the project. So that's kind of where the term a ghostwriter comes from.
David's career has been about the arc of people's lives, other people's lives.
Story is one of the key things in my life. I've realized over time I've been so drawn to the concept of story, but I don't feel that I'm a writer. I'm not a director. I'm not a creative storyteller in a sense. But at the same time, I'm so drawn to the idea of be it a biblical story or an average person walking down the road. Like, all of these stories are so key to me, and I've had a hard time figuring out how I fit into that. So my entire life, you know, I studied marketing in college. I studied psychology in college. What I really wanted to do was understand why people do the things that they do. That was one of the key things that I discovered that I really wanted to know. Not a matter of, you know, why does the protagonist do this? Why does the antagonist do this? What I really wanted to learn was why. What's the motivation behind them? And so that became the motive. That became the motives for why people tell the stories that they do tell. And that's what I was fascinated with. So whenever we work on a project with somebody, I always like to understand, where is the story coming from? Like, why are you telling the story? Why are you better at telling the story than somebody else? And so that's my first question is, what's the motive? Why are you telling the story? And I realized that it's kind of an issue with my own life that I have a story that I want to tell, but I feel like I've never really been able to tell it. And so maybe a self-handicapping thing that I have is that I like to tell other people's stories. I find that I very much downplay what's going on in my life and upplay what's going on in somebody else's life and talking about their story, where they're coming from, what they want to accomplish, where they're going, what their goals are, because I felt for a long time that I really didn't have a story that was worth telling. But a few years ago, just things happened in my life that just kind of changed that whole concept of what kind of story I do or don't have to tell.
But the 1 millimeter change, I'll show you one of them right now. Check this out. Stay in the state of certainty. Some of you lost it. Intensify it, whatever it takes. Intensify. Make your move. Come on. Make your move. Say yes. Say yes. Say yes. Say yes.
Tony Robbins is an evangelist for success. Back in July, his seminar got in hot water after some of his conference attendees walked across hot coals. More than a dozen suffered second and third degree burns. He's a self-help motivational speaker who gives seminars around the country, around the world. And it was at this unlikely event that David found his inciting incident.
So I'm at this expert conference for about 4 days in San Francisco, and I'm really not a big fan of these conferences, to be honest. I'm not a big, like, go there and hug everybody and yell things and clap, and, you know, it's just a very, it's not my style, but nevertheless, I'm there. One of the first things that people ask at this conference is, well, what are you an expert in? And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the majority of people there are experts in nutrition or chiropractic therapy or water hydration or Pilates. You know, everybody is an expert in something. And then there's me, and I'm kind of an expert in helping other experts. So literally from the beginning, people say, oh, what are you an expert in? And I try to explain that I help experts become better experts, because that's actually what, you know, Dot & Cross, my company, and now Robinhood Inc. Does.
The first speaker that day outlined the way to become an expert, how to get noticed, how to rise above the competition. And then Tony Robbins told those in attendance something shocking, something mind-blowing that contradicted the first speaker.
At an expert conference, he actually says, forget about becoming an expert. There's nothing good that can come of it. He goes, what you need to become is an authority. And like a light bulb went off in my head when I heard this. I was like, that's it. That's what I need. He's trying to explain, the first guy was trying to explain how you can beat the system, how you can just get to an expert really quickly. You can set yourself up and make money and show how you're different from all these people. And he's saying, no, that's not how you do it at all. When you become an authority, it's your personal experiences that make you an authority. Nobody can take away your memories. Nobody can take away the pain you suffered. Nobody can take away the victories that you fought for. Nobody can take away the struggles that you faced in an ongoing journey. And this is, it's almost like what Malcolm Gladwell says, when you put in your 10,000 hours, that's where you start to become an expert at something, as opposed to the previous guy who's like, hey, you can do this really simply, you know, just figure a few things out. And literally at the end of it, he kind of alpha wolfed us. He said, if you give me 1 month, you choose the area of topic, I will out-expert you. He's like, I can go online, I can learn more information about you, I will know more about your field of study in 1 month than you. And he essentially issued a challenge. He's like, does anybody want to challenge me? And of course, we were all, you know, scared. We're like, no, we're not going to challenge Tony Robbins. But what he said was, it doesn't matter what type of expert you want to be. He goes, what truly matters is the type of authority that you carry with you. And when he said that, that changed it. And so a lot of what I learned, you know, previous to this moment was the difference between being an expert in something and knowing the information versus being an authority in something and having wisdom in something and having more than just information, but having wisdom to apply to life based on your own personal experiences. And that was like such a key moment for me in life. Everything was kind of laid on the table at that one moment, and I kind of saw two different pathways for myself. One was this pathway of becoming an expert and knowing all the answers and creating controversy, and this is the best way to do it based on my study, versus the other road of becoming an authority and just doing the work and doing really great work and letting people see you for what you truly are, and not having to tell people to follow you. That people will naturally follow the authorities once they see them in their own life. And so I was 27 years old at the time, and I really saw these two things laid on the table and knew that I had to make a decision which one of those two people I wanted to be.
27 years old, and the pathway was laid out for David clearly, a turning point for him. But there was a twist to this inciting incident. It happened on the night before the conference ended, something unexpected, something life-changing. We'll hear more of David's story in a moment. Again, you can read his entire account of his inciting incident, as well as others, in the book titled Inciting Incidents. Find out more at moodyradio.org.
I was 17 years old, and I just started my junior year of high school. I was a complete procrastinator. I think I am still. And you know, was getting ready for picture day the next day. It was the beginning of my junior year. So I had my nightly routine of not doing any homework and, you know, watching TV and talking to my friends. And around 11 o'clock, I was going to take my nightly shower because I'm not a morning person, so I was not going to take a morning shower.
Meet Tracy Persico, reliving her inciting incident. A typical teenager then, doing what she'd done just about every night of her life. Until that night, until that shower.
So I went into my nightly shower, and everything was the same. All nightly routines were in place. And then when I stepped out of the shower, everything had changed. My mother was out of her bed. The lights were on in her bedroom. TV was off. She was on the phone with my older brother, asking him to come home. He was at a local college. My father was nowhere to be found. Our front door was wide open, and I had no idea what just happened. It was like a 30-minute shower. It had just changed my life. So I ran downstairs and I asked my mom, you know, what's going on? And she sat me down and after she got off the phone with my brother and said that my father had decided right then and there to come upstairs before he went to bed, that he could not be in the marriage anymore, that he had decided that was the time that he was going to leave. And that was just heartbreaking for me, that he confessed to a 2-year affair that he was having, which my mother had known 2 years prior, had talked to him about, but, you know, it continued on. I didn't understand why at that moment, why at the end of the day, why at 11 o'clock at night was that the decision, and why did he wait till I went into the shower and not talk to both of us at the same time? Like, was I not worth saying that to as well? Was I not worth saying that he was not just done with the marriage, but he was also done with our family when he walked out the door? And that's when he walked out. He walked out at 11:30 one night and came back early the next morning. I had gotten maybe 2 hours of sleep and then woke up, wanted to get a piece of his clothing. So I ran to his closet around 7:30 and already found that his closet had been cleaned out. He'd come back early, even earlier than I was sleeping, and cleaned out his whole closet, and I did not even get one stitch of clothing from him. And he had already left again. I felt like I'd missed the chance to even say goodbye a second time, or was not given the opportunity to hear the truth or to hear what he was thinking. So it just felt like a dagger within a, you know, a double dagger within 24 hours of not having explanation, not sort of being worth an explanation, and not giving the chance to have closure or say goodbye or hear any of that. I wanted a piece of my father's clothing because I felt like that was one thing that I had. If I could just have one tangible thing of his, that I would remind me that he was there, that, you know, it sort of happened so fast and he became sort of this phantom person that I just kept missing. Like, I just couldn't see or catch up with. And so I just wanted one thing to hold on to, and I didn't know when I would be able to get to see him again, or when we would have a conversation, or when he would come back, or if he would come back. And so I just felt like I needed one tangible thing to hold on to.
Tracy's crisis moment, her inciting incident, had come on the heels of a spiritual awakening and a realization that God's forgiveness changes everything.
I had literally just met the Lord probably 3 months before my father had made that decision. I did not grow up in a Christian home. So I actually met the Lord through an organization called Young Life and had just gone on a weekend with them and had heard the gospel for the first time. And I had gone to church, you know, earlier on, but just felt like it was very dry. It was very non-personal. But this guy got up there and was talking about the state of our hearts and how we are separated from the Lord, and was talking about forgiveness and bridging the gap, and that Christ died for our sins. And it just sort of created this moment of like, oh my gosh, my life is empty, and I've been trying to fill it with friends and guys and popularity and sports and all these things that a high school kid, you know, tries to deem as cool and deem as, you know, life-giving or what life looks like. But then being presented with the state of the heart, it created this sort of fork in the road for me of, I need to make some better decisions, because what I'm doing and the decisions I'm making are only leading me down this road of death and more separation from God. And so I'd been sort of introduced to this idea of forgiveness in my 17-year-old brain, was grasping it in terms of making minor life choices that were different, like, doing my homework, or, spending more time with Christian friends, or going to youth group, or, making minor decisions that were different. But then coming in contact with this huge life-changing incident that presented a larger sin, so to speak, than what I was doing in high school. And I didn't really understand or grasp the concept of forgiveness that could be that big. Like, I didn't know how to reconcile this God who could forgive me for what I thought was these minor sins. And then how was God going to forgive my dad? Like, how could he forgive somebody who just wrecked our family and changed my life forever? And there's no going back on that. And so where is God in the midst of that? I think inciting incidences don't change where life comes from. Like, we can either still choose God in the midst of that, or we don't. And we can still have that fork in the road of saying, you know what, I'm going to take control of my own life. I'm going to self-medicate. I'm going to choose what I think is still life-giving. Or we can choose God and saying, you know what, I caught a glimpse of redemption. I caught a glimpse of forgiveness. And I caught a glimpse of what life could be like and how different it is. And I mean, God is all heart. Like, he is in our heart. He changes our heart. And that matters. That is where the healing happens. And so I had a decision to make. I had a fork in the road and had to decide, which life am I going to go down? Which road am I going to choose?
Well, I got to jump in here. We'll begin again tomorrow where I left off. The book is called Inciting Incidents by Moody Publishers. And right now, the third caller at 217-367-7777 for our Indiana listeners, 1-888-333-9466. The third caller will get a copy of Inciting Incidents, 6 Stories of Fighting Disappointments in a Flawed World. Call now. And for those of you that are listening to the re-airing of this morning's program, also at this point in the program, the third caller will get a copy of Inciting Incidents. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night. And be sure to tune in tomorrow and Wednesday for part 2 and 3 of Inciting Incidents right here during Mark and Friends on Great News Radio.